Very nice morning. 33, 34 out here. Wind chill. It puts it down in the 20s. Beautiful, beautiful full moon. Casting light upon everything. In fact, it's getting to the point soon that we're going to slip back to daylight saving time. What a presumption to call it that, as if we're somehow saving daylight. What foolishness. It snowed a few days ago. Sunday night, Monday morning. Snowed about, I don't know, good drift. And so we have what we needed here. Little precipitation, as always. Never known a time when we had enough. Although, no, I do remember once it flooded a lot. But that was like 1996 or something. Where it rained so much that the streets were full of water. That was crazy. Anyway, so that was nearly 20 years ago. So not really something to worry about too much. What happens every 20 or 25 years at best is who cares? Okay. Let's see, what else we got going on? I can't really think of anything. There's always a quandary over what is the appropriate wear for these morning walks. I have my big jacket, my PGS jacket, which is now 20 years old, but, you know, good jacket and good shape, has held up very, 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 very well. Let's see, what else is happening here? So I'm not wearing that today. Today I'm wearing my cotton pullover. I guess you call it a sweater. I don't know. I like to think of it as my lumberjack wear. And what else really? I actually have a short sleeve shirt on underneath it. But then I woke up today, found a short sleeve shirt. Then I looked at conditions out here. And of course, the humidity is still quite high. It's in the 60s and 70s for humidity. Well, for this place, that's high. And so our normal conditions really get affected. Like I was saying, the temperature is probably 32, 33, and the wind chill is down around 20. So the combination is quite devastating, I suppose. suppose you could say. Well, regardless. So I got the short sleeve shirt I mistakenly put on this morning. Then my cotton fake wool. I'm sure that under normal circumstances it would be a wool pullover, but mine going the other cotton. Cable though, nicely. It's got some heft to it. Not too much. I don't think we rarely have conditions here that would warrant the wearing of wool. And then just my regular jacket on over it. My jacket, which the lining's pretty much gone on it. But I've used it for many years. I forget when I picked this up. I'm trying to remember if this was a in transit PGS purchase. I'm not sure what it was. I tend to think it was after that. Mostly a wind shell. Doesn't do much else. So we are layering today. Should have worn a long sleeve shirt. But I don't have a full set of those. At some point during the week, I have to either do a short sleeve polo or I have to resort to a long sleeved t-shirt. I prefer having a collar. A little more formal, I guess. That sounds stupid, doesn't it? It's not formal at all. But it does look like I'm going out to the beach or something. God, that reminds me. Oh. Around this time last year, my grandmother passed away. Everybody met in California, and we went to the beach, and the smells, and the sound, and just everything about it was just, return to other times, not necessarily better, times are pretty good right now, but oh, it's wonderful. Every now and then, conditions are right here where you feel, you can almost smell the sea breeze. Oh, it's marvelous. Oh, I miss that sometimes. I only miss it when I get it and remember what I'm missing. Well, Reese accuses, and typically always rightly so, that when I'm making these recordings as opposed to listening to something, I walk slower. I think that's probably pretty round the money. If I need to make a state effort to walk faster. This is not supposed to be a casual walk. I'm supposed to be doing a little bit of something. At least burning off some calories. Anyway. I was just observing this morning. I'm waking up like 2 or 3 minutes before the alarm goes off. As opposed to 2 or 3 hours before. Which would give me time to write. I haven't been writing much lately at all. Not even essays at work. Oh. Of course, nothing's really come to mind for needing writing about, particularly. I mean, there's always something. Come on. But otherwise, kind of a slow time, a lull. Of course, I haven't been asking Heavenly Father to really open that up for me, like I was doing last year in earnest, which cranked out Escape. But, I don't know. I haven't been really thinking about prophecy at all. Kind of letting what little I've thrown out there ride. Foreign service. A few other things I applied for. I'm not really sure what I want to have happen. As I think about the Foreign Service, and Lisa says this as well, she's a little trepidatious because I'm not really a gung-ho cheerleader on America. Not a crime, but not particularly promising for the job, that says. Do you want I get this thing. I've walked past it probably 50 times, but now I'm just looking at a little charred piece of wood that looks kind of like an animal. Regardless, one of the things I'm sure they're going to zero in on, especially in these difficult times, is are you willing to promulgate the foreign policy of the United States even if you don't agree with it? I don't know exactly what that means, except that they seem to be kind of cheerleadery about it. And that's the job, as far as I'm aware of, is to be a cheerleader for the USA. I think I could cheerlead for what I hope the USA would be. There are ways of looking at it that I think that would work for me, although I don't know if it would work for them. They always talk about the best and the brightest. But that what we ask them to do, and it's kind of a, well, I hope I can qualify as being bright. I don't know about the best at all. But I think in being a thoughtful, thinking, pondering person, which I don't really know if that's what they really want at all. You'll think it's a tangent, but I'm hoping to bring it back. Mr. Hilberg at school, who's been teaching for an awfully long time, he's going to retire this year. But he really likes the twins. The twins are smart as a whip, little guys, but self-control isn't one of their paragons. Anyway, they've been trading video. Mr. Hilmer has been enjoying our Stargate SG-1s, and as a return favor, I suppose, he gave us the complete Wooster and Jeeves. Now, I already knew about Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry from other things that they had done. People would say, oh yeah, you probably will see him on House. And you go, I have never watched House in my life. It happened long after the TV blew up. And I'm not into crime / medical procedural type shows to begin with. I find them tedious. But we got Wooster and Jeeves, which is quite old. It was when both of them were quite young. And when I think about the Foreign Service, there's this attitude that a lot of people have that they're cookie pushers. And nothing is really said about what exactly that reference means, and of course, they all think they're so sly and saying, I really don't know what that means, which is just infuriating. Because you always talk about we need to fight the impression that we're cookie pushers. And you go, it seems to me if you were wanting to fight an impression, it would actually be helpful if we acknowledge what exactly Cookie Pusher was meant to portray. I think it has to do something with being kind of a dandy, going out for drinks later, spreading around money, you're supposed to be friendly with the upper crust, the hoity-toities. You have to understand, these are the people that make policy and make decisions and make decisions. So, you can look down that kind of behavior if you like, but it's really what's going to make things happen, which is what a diplomat's supposed to do. So my way of thinking is, being called a cookie pusher, you might as well just shrug and go, huh? It gets the job done. Almost like a little psychological game going on. Now, I'm not much for the psychological games, although I've heard that I can play them quite well. I don't think much of it. Ooh. This looks like a more intense form of cruiser here. a newer police interceptor. God. That thing's sounding so militant these days. The modern view of the police officer as a member of SWAT team is somebody dressed up in bulletproof wear, looking like special forces. I remember with nostalgia when police officers were peace officers, charged with keeping the peace. You know, I wish we had more of those. Unfortunately, the few places where you actually find that concept still holding true, that even whether it really is true or not, at least the title being done that way, kind of the Andy Griffith sort of Mayberry cliche. Wouldn't it be nice if we still had peace officers? Not people that spent their time trying to catch you in infractions and fine you or bring you to justice. Running a red light is the worst crime in the universe. But one who was simply far more interested in keeping life peaceful and taking care of, I guess, the quintessential thing was in the when I was young, very young, before the great war on drugs really kicked in, police officers, if they saw you driving erratically on the road, their tendency would be to pull you over, put you in the back of their car, take you back to the police station, not locking you up so that you can be tried for whatever, reckless driving or whatever, but just to let you sleep it off. And they let you go in the morning when you were sobered back, when you were sober again. For being quasi-open-minded these days, in what kind of behaviors are acceptable. It's incredible how puritanical we're coming on so many other matters. Regardless, we're talking about Wooster and Jeeves. I think Wooster, Bertie Wooster, Bertrand, is probably a model diplomat. If he were to get a job, diplomacy would likely be well suited for him. Always has something to say. Is always thinking of ways to help. Yeah, he's a very well-meaning and nice fella. Sometimes thinks too much of his abilities. Jeeves always has to bail him out. Jeeves being far more crafty. I think I am far more Jeeves-ish than I am Wooster-ish. And that kind of worries me because I think what the Foreign Service wants is it wants a few more Jesus. In its diplomatic core, a little more chatty, yet how would you say it? Yet saying nothing. God's is small talk. Mostly wanting to be friendly to everybody. And because it's really the relationship, I think, from which bubbles up what we consider to be diplomacy. I tend to be a good guy in a jam. Which is a little more Jeezy, like I was talking about. So I don't know, really know if the Foreign Service is right for me. But I'm gonna let it play through. Like I was telling Lisa a little while ago. If I don't pass the test, I won't be making an effort to do again. I remember the first time I really ran into a psychology test. I don't know what. It's not a personality test, it's more of a of a I forget. Anyway. I haven't met a personality test I couldn't fail. On some level. I used to work for Allsup's, a convenience store chain in this part of the country. Worked there quite a bit during my college years. Money was good. It was a night job, so it didn't interfere with school at all. As long as you can find somewhere to sleep in your time schedule. It never conflicted with school at all. So I went to work there. And ultimately, they started getting into these hiring tests. The last time I tried to go back to work for them, they had one of these tests, and I guess the extent of reason was it was trying to figure out whether you were the right sort of person for this work. And I told you to be honest in these tests. It was mostly about whether you would steal something from the company. I think that was the extent of what they gave as the reason. Of course, psychologists make it a point of not telling you exactly what they're after. Or not really even telling their customers what they're collecting. And I've always hoped that I failed these tests because I'm an honest person, but I can see through the test, I think. Maybe I can. They try to make it as impossible to rig as they can. I know they put in much effort and theory into making these tests reveal you. And I've gotten to the point over time where I just try to answer as straightforwardly as I can. And if it says, well, he's a liar, or he's obviously rigging the test because he knows nobody's going to answer this consistently this way, or like this. Nobody's that honest. And I tend to fail these tests. Like I said, I took one for Alsips and failed it, so that was them showing me the door and saying, no, we're not going to hire you because you didn't pass that test. And I was like, oh, all right. It was fine. It was desperate times. I ended up finding something else, and I'm being okay. Which I think the psychological tests are excellent from one standpoint. I think God can interject himself quite readily into these to prevent you from doing something you shouldn't be doing. I hope it's that. I don't think I'm a bad person. I don't find myself particularly conniving either. But if I do see conniving going on, I'm not big into conniving, period. I don't like it. To other people being conniving, particularly. But, I don't know, given our culture, it may be a test of intelligence. Intelligent people can connive and can trick and can and will do things when they know they're not being watched. This, that. And so when these psychological tests are being used, the next time I've run up against one was just last year. I did a test for Shell Oil, and they came back and said, "Well, you failed the test, so we're not even gonna consider it. You can retake the test again in another year." And it's like, no. So if I didn't pass this time, I'm not gonna pass. It was mostly the actual theory and intelligence test. I think I aced easily. And but there was a section that was a bit of a truth detector test. And apparently I failed that one. And I thought I work really hard these days just to let it all out. How I feel about things, what I feel is acceptable and not acceptable, trying to do a job well and according to the standards put forth to me. And I fail tests. So I have to think, or I choose to think, that I'm not the right person for the job. And it's good that we find that out now. I don't have a lot of faith in psychological tests in the first place. Which is another indicator to me that I'm in the wrong country. But I don't know if the Foreign Service is the right way to explore the countries. I think I gave up a while back, at least consciously. I'm trying to find the place where I fit in. I think I gave up on that. At least, right, at least working toward it, trying to find such a place. But I see and read interesting things. Just Monday, as I was home doing the work, with the snow being the way it was, there was no sense in driving all the way into work. In fact, they closed down the place where I was supposed to go work. Although, even if it were open, I saw no purpose in going in. There are no calls anyway. I read an article about how to encapsulate it. Its title had something to do with Americans being the weirdest people in the world. And that this was actually kind of discovered by researchers who were outcasts from other disciplines for which they had originally gone into. And they had done studies in some third world countries among some interesting cultures. I forget the name of the culture they went into. And the supposition had become, over the years, by the individual fields, and this is half political, and it's true. I remember studying a little bit about anthropology and where anthropology had gone. Originally, anthropology was about going and studying Africans because they were so much different than Western Europeans. Studying their culture makes for really interesting books of the time, sold really well. The methodology, I like to call it the orthodoxy, gets codified. And that's where things like the study of anthropology came from. It's actually the inculcation of a of a methodology, a way of looking at the world, a way of studying it, that is supposed to enlighten on some level. And people started to notice that the givens, the suppositions, which I've always been a person to say, do we have good givens? Do we see them as being correct? And most of them are pretty flimsy. But a lot of institutional inertia, and I use that phrase sometimes, a lot of institutional inertia toward doing it, continuing to do it this way. Oh my God. Oh, shoelace came up. Loose, unloose. How do you become unloose? There we go. Oh. So many people do it that way, and whatever inherent biases that way has are just built into the discipline. For instance, you can only be an anthropologist if you honor the narrative research method. That learning comes from direct observation, being in the place. It's hard to tell if that's right or wrong. It's a good way to look at things or not a good way to look at things. But it tends to flavor, you can even bring it to bias, it tends to bias the research. And in this Econ Talk episode, I found it quite interesting because these are thoughts that I had had in the past, that we are far too mathematical and scientific about everything. And that when you reduce down all academia, all scholarly thought to science, formulae, and the mixing of chemicals, introduction of catalysts, things of this nature, you can look at it as applying the principles of chemistry to everything. You see it most in Got Love. Do two people have, quote, have chemistry, unquote? And everything kind of falls down into that kind of a thing. Is it a chemical reaction? Can we measure it? If you have more of this hormone than that hormone, we would expect to see this or that. For me, it harkens back to medieval medicine. And of course, one of my story projects is about the fact that what would happen if medieval medicine discovered some attribute, some ability, that modern medicine, because of its orthodoxy, dismisses, but that it's really there. And I did it in time travel, that this had something to do with yellow bile. It had to do with various manipulations of the spleen. I even had that it was the removal of the spleen which causes, it doesn't cause a person to die as such. You really have to be studious about taking care of yourself. You're more susceptible to certain kinds of diseases, and the chances of you dying early are much increased. But the removal of the spleen doesn't kill you. But it may cause problems later on. So that was a fun little thing. And it might turn into a story. I thought that I would do it as a bunch of short stories, the kind of things you sell for 99 cents on the Kindle store. That leads you down this road. You start running into people who can travel through time. And the funny thing is, they're all from medieval times, from like the 13th, 14th century. I don't know if we want to try to paint the Black Death as having been almost triggered by these kinds of weird experiments. But it seems just as likely as any other thing. When they say exotic strains of something came from the East, and this is really the first time the East and West coincide, it's like, I don't think that's true. I don't think it's the first time that rats really migrated that far. I think rats have been migrating for a long time. Why particularly this period? And I would be much more likely to think that something like the Black Death was caused by us starting to play with things. We can see over human developmental times, more than I think anything else, the likelihood of one or two or three people, usually as, how do you say it, as proteges of each other, building on the work of another person, that these things will manifest themselves when you pervert something, bad things will happen. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Black Death was such a thing. An experiment gone, as we say now, viral. So anyway, it really has to do with the whole concept of orthodoxy. And I find it hilarious when people talk about the concept of thinking outside the box. I laugh and I laugh because it's a fallacy. It's a fallacy. the only people who can think outside the box are those who are outside the box. And our culture, society, has made it very known, and if you want an example, look back at the psychological test I've been talking about for half an hour or so, that these people are, that these people are castigated, they aren't wanted in society. So when they say, we need somebody who thinks outside the box, no they don't. They want somebody like themselves who can somehow morph into a different person that thinks differently, has a different way of looking at things. And I think you'll be hard-pressed to find anybody like that. I'm pretty certain that I am a person who lies outside the box. I run all the time into, women call it the glass ceiling. I can't become a major CEO of a major corporation. It just doesn't work, or whatever. Whether it's a real sensation or not really doesn't matter. There must be something similar for outside the box people like me. And I would suppose a classic way to determine that, if you're even trying to determine such a thing, would be to give them a psychological test and say, oh no, this is some weird guy. We cannot predict what this person will do. In not being able to predict what they're going to do, we don't want anything to do with them. The orthodoxy at this time, built on science, wants predictability, wants something to be replicated. Early on in my studies in child development, I ran into a personality called Carl Rogers. And Carl Rogers was an infuriating figure. To a lot of people, he seemed to be able to do things that couldn't be replicated by other people. That really caught my attention. And I think I more browsed than read some of his books. One of his books I still have, Freedom to Learn. Which I think is a statement of an out-of-the-box person. These are out-of-the-box people. John Holt, out-of-the-box person. Who is kind of a unschooling person. My poor wife. My whole philosophy of education was to unschool our children. Because I think education makes no sense. The way we conduct education makes no sense. And having them in school is almost a crime to them. Of course, there's a good school of thought that would say that the most important thing is to learn where you fit in, or to teach yourself to fit in somewhere, I think is the better way to look at it for a person like me. I was experimenting with the whole idea of, can we find a more authentic way to live? A way that where it honors us. I think of us as if there's a large group of us. I wouldn't be surprised if there were. I always thought of it as being a brother from another mother type of thing. We know that in the celestial realm. That there may be a multiplicity of wives, but most likely Heavenly Father has more than one wife. And that although people are on this earth, the majority of them come from one mother, and I probably come from another. Oh. I just see my son Joshua driving. Oh my. He's struggling with it. We don't have lots of experience. Didn't say I ever did either. Regardless, we get through life how we do. And I pray that they'll be safe. Poor Lisa's scared to death. Josh is going to kill her. But she's very bold. That's one thing that my wife is. She's steadfast and bold about sticking to her guns. So I respect most about her. Very orthodox way to be. But it's part of the orthodoxy that I think is respectable. And Lisa puts up with me, and that's great, for being always unorthodox. Anytime I try to behave in an orthodox fashion, something untwisted funny, and I can't. I don't breathe very well or something. Regardless. So when it comes to psychological tests, I always do poorly. If there's going to be a psychological test applied, it usually just ends up being, why bother taking it? I know I will fail. Because it is typically a measure of your predictability according to the orthodoxy. And if you cannot be predictable, then, or if what you're going to do cannot be predicted ahead of time, you aren't very useful to those people. It's important to have a leg up on you on some level, to be able to say, if I do this, this is how they're going to, this is how they're going to react. I always look at things differently. I seem to react to different stimuli. I don't know if there will be some magic moment when somebody comes and says, Mr. Nemo, we want you to do this. And you're not going to have to worry about income or money or anything like that. We want you. There's something about you that the otter. Boy, would that be a day. And what almost gives up hope that such time will never come. But you keep throwing yourself out there to see what will happen. And I guess that's what I've been doing more than anything else lately, in these recordings, in my essays, in the writing. It's just be myself more and more and more, even though being myself has never really profited me anything at all. My present job, I seem to be doing okay. It seems to be a good place to hold the time and to develop these other talents that I have. So, it's interesting, and I'm not sure exactly how to I'm not sure exactly what to say or do. Sorry, Garma. My walk has come to an end. And the time was pretty good. Not bad. My sanity walk, maybe. For other people to decide what these things do. Okay, well, I'm in. I think I pretty much know what I need to say.